Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Bill Cloud, and welcome to Returning to Our Roots. Thank you for joining us today. I hope that you've been tuning in from week to week because we are building an argument that says things that are going on today, the calls for coexistence and tolerance and things of this nature, are happening because in a similar fashion they happened in the beginning with the establishment of Babylon under the leadership of Nimrod. And we were talking in the previous programs about the concept of journeying from the east, that they were headed west, which is emblematic of the fact that they were heading away from God, His instructions, His laws, to embrace their own philosophies and ideologies. They were headed toward mixing and mingling, because that's what Babylon represents. Well, today we're going to begin talking about another component of this overall theme, and that is that they wanted to build a city. And so as we begin today, we're going to go back and read our text from Genesis chapter 11, beginning at verse 1, and the building of Babylon. So it begins, "Now the whole earth had one language and one speech," which, as we've said in a previous program, that means they were speaking the same language, but philosophically they were all on the same page. "And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east," Mekedem, "they were headed toward the west, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly.' And they had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth.'" So once again, to kind of recap, what we see here is they're all on the same page philosophically. They all speak the same language. They're all headed toward the west, away from God's instructions, away from God's statutes and judgments, etc. And they're going to make a city of bricks. And if you'll recall from the last program, we talked about the difference between bricks and stones. Stones are created by God. They're created unique. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're small, sometimes they're common, sometimes they're very precious. Nevertheless, all created unique by God. Whereas bricks are man-made. Man will take clay, and he'll take straw and water. He mixes and mingles these unique components together until they cease being unique. They become uniform. They become very commonplace. And one looks like the other. And this is what Babylon was built of. By the way, Jerusalem is comprised of stones. And so you have these two polar opposites. And I don't believe that's an accident. But now, today, the building of bricks, I'm arguing, is synonymous with the call to be coexistent, to be tolerant, social justice, these kinds of things, for everybody to be on the same level playing field, wealth redistribution, to take away from some who have more to give it to those who have less, well, against the other's will, so that we can kind of even things out. That's what is a prevailing mindset in this day and time. And again, if you recall, these things happen because they've already happened, because what's going on in the end happens because it already happened in the beginning. And then they say this, "Come, let us build ourselves a city." Now, even though Nimrod is not mentioned here, Nimrod is the one who's overseeing the building of this city. Because in Genesis chapter 10, we are told that he began to be a mighty one upon the earth. He began to assert his authority. He wanted to establish his kingdom, which means he has to have subjects. And he began to do this in the land of Shinar with the building of Babel, or as it became known later, Babylon. And remember that he was a mighty hunter in the face of the Lord. And he is a rebel, and he is trying to find subjects that will submit their will to his will. And so what we see here in Genesis 11 is that the people eventually join him in this rebellion. Now, whether that was wittingly or not, we'll have to leave it in the realm of conjecture. But nevertheless, they joined him in this rebellion, and they began the building of Babylon, and that's how Nimrod began his kingdom. Now, I said all of that to say this, because we're focusing on let us build us a city. Before Nimrod, there's only one other person in the biblical record that's on record as building a city. And it just so happens it's another rebel. It's a guy by the name of Cain. Because after his offering was rejected and Abel's was accepted, and God spoke to him and says, "Why is your countenance falling? If you know to, you know what to do. If you do what's good, won't I accept your offering as well?" Well, in response to that, he goes out and he lures his brother into the field. He sets a trap. Nimrod is a mighty hunter. Esau is a skillful hunter, knows how to set a trap. That's exactly what Cain did. And so after he had murdered his brother, the Bible tells us this, that God cursed him. And let's read here from Genesis 4. "So now you are cursed from the earth." God is speaking to Cain. "You are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you." Now remember, before this, Cain is a man of the field. He grows things. So God continues and says, "A fugitive and a vagabond you shall be on the earth." And Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is greater than I can bear. Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me." And the Lord said to him, "Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold." And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. So let me comment just a minute or two on those verses. There's nowhere in the text that suggests that before Cain kills Abel, that God was unwilling to accept Cain's offering if Cain had done it the right way. But because he refuses to do that, he refuses the admonition of the Lord, he refuses his counsel, he rejects the word of God, more or less. By default, he receives that other word. He listens to that other voice. He listens to his will. And so, again, I believe he lures his brother into the field. He murders him there. And that's why God cursed him. He's the first one on record to commit murder, which means that he is emulating the adversary. And that's a theme that we've been trying to bring up again and again, that all these people, Nimrod, Esau, Cain, they're all emulating and all following the pattern established by the adversary. They're employing the same tactics that he does. So what has this got to do with building the city? Well, let's read on, verse 16. "Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch." Now, by the way, that is not the same Enoch that is the one who was taken up because God took him, a different man entirely. "And he built a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch." Now, here's the curse. Up until this point, Cain has been a farmer, for lack of a better word. He's been tilling the ground. He's a man of the field. But now the ground's not going to produce anything for him. God has cursed the ground for that reason. Or he's cursed Cain, and so the ground's not going to respond to Cain anymore as punishment for the murder. He's also told that he's going to be a vagabond and a wanderer. Now think about what a vagabond and a wanderer, a nomad is. They go from place to place to place to place. They don't set down roots in any one place. They're always on the move. I mean, they might be in a place for a little while, but eventually they're going to have to move on. And by the way, he has the brand of a murderer on him. So that is very important to consider when you realize that Cain is going to go and build a city. Now I want to read verse 13, Cain's response to the curse that God has placed upon him. "Cain said to the Lord, 'My punishment is greater than I can bear. "Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face." I want you to take note of that phrase. "I shall be hidden from your face. I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond on the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me." Here's why I wanted to emphasize that statement, "I shall be hidden from your face." Nowhere did God say that. God said that you're going to be punished, you're going to be cursed, the ground's not going to render its fruit for you, you're going to be a vagabond and a wanderer, and I'm going to set a mark upon you. Never did God say that you shall be hidden from my face. That is a statement that Cain makes, and the way the Hebrew is constructed, it suggests that Cain is saying, okay, this punishment you've placed upon me, it's more than I can handle. So you've driven me out, so here's what's going to happen. I'm going to hide from you. I'm going to hide from you, and it implies you're not going to find me. I'll be a vagabond and a wanderer, but I'm going to conceal myself from you. I'm going to hide myself from you. In fact, the term there, the root term where he says hide is satar. Here's how I want you to think of this. Since Cain and others emulate the adversary, who is first introduced to us in Genesis chapter 3 as a serpent, because that serpent in the garden is not an ordinary serpent, because John the Revelator refers back to him in Revelation chapter 12 as the devil, that serpent of old. So how does a serpent stalk its prey? It conceals itself. It blends into the environment. It's quiet. It's stealthy. Because it wants its prey to be lured in. It wants its prey to think that everything's okay. And so it conceals itself. If you'll allow me to put it this way, I'm suggesting that what Cain was saying, I'm going to hide. I'm going to conceal myself. You're not going to find me. Now, that suggests that there is no remorse on Cain's part. Cain's not some repentant young man saying, oh no, I've done something awful and terrible, please forgive me. Nowhere is that mentioned. There is no remorse that's mentioned here. It's just that an unrepentant Cain is saying, okay, you've driven me out, you put this great punishment on me. And by the way, he had already rejected what God had said earlier. No sign of remorse or willingness to listen to what God had to say. So I'm going to underscore that point by saying this. If he was remorseful, if he was willing to accept what God had said and take his lumps and take his punishment, part of which is to be a vagabond and a wanderer, a nomad, someone who doesn't set down roots, then why then does he go and build a city? Because if you build a city, what is the implication? You want to draw other people here, and you want to set down some roots. You want to stay in one place. I'm suggesting that what Cain was telling God by building a city is, I'll show you. I'm not going to accept what you've said. So he builds a city. Now, we also have to take into consideration that Cain was fearful that someone was going to come and take vengeance because he's a murderer. And so if he's just wandering out there on the road, on the highway, out in the desert somewhere, by himself or in his little entourage, then he would be easy to spot. And anyone who wants to take vengeance wouldn't have any problem finding him and then going out and taking vengeance. But what if he built a city? And what if the city began to be populated with lots of other people? It would be possible then for him to blend into the environment and make it harder for him to find. Remembering now how a serpent stalks its prey. It blends into the environment. Here's what I'm getting at. There was an old TV program years ago, many of you remember it, called The Fugitive. And it was about a man who was falsely accused of murdering his wife, and so he's on the run from the law. And where does he hide? Not in the country, not in the wilderness, but in the city. In fact, he's hidden in plain sight, right under their nose. By the way, when bin Laden was found, when Osama bin Laden was found, after years and years and years of searching in the mountains of Pakistan and Afghanistan, where did they find him? In a city? In a house right under their noses? I'm trying to point out here that a city, thematically speaking, is a place where you have mixing and mingling. And anytime you have mixing and mingling on a grand scale, a murderer like Cain, a rebel like Cain, or Nimrod, or Esau, or a host of others that we could mention, can more easily blend in with the environment. They can more easily set a snare for their prey. And so, in a sense, the concept of a city and what it represents is the antithesis of what God intended. God put man in a garden, not in a city. You think about crime and things that are lewd and things that are corrupt and things that are wicked and where it's concentrated. More often than not, it's in a city. Sure, you can find it anywhere, and especially in this day and time. But I would argue that most of the things that you find in the country have spilled over from the city. Because in the city, it's concentrated. And in the city, you can more readily engage in these blatant and obvious and wicked things and it not stand out as much as it would in the country. Because you've got this mixing and mingling and coexistence and tolerance and all these things going on. So Cain is the first one to build a city. And so then, early on, cities, many of them anyway, are associated with rebels. They're associated with rebellion. They're associated with opposition to the Creator and to His laws. And so this makes me wonder where Cain built his city, considering that he went east, away from the Garden of Eden. And I believe that the Garden of Eden was what we now call Israel. So do you know which way he headed? He headed toward what would later be the land of Shinar. I'm not saying he built it there. It just makes me wonder where he built his city. Now, as I said, today, cities are associated with iniquity and wickedness. You can find just about anything that you want to look for in most American cities, or cities around the world for that matter. Now, with that in mind, I want to seemingly go off topic and read you something from the Gospel of John, chapter 12. It says, "Then Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Yeshua, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray him, said, 'Why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?' This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money box, and he used to take what was put in it." So there's several things to take into consideration here. Judas Iscariot, he's carrying the money pouch, and he's the one that's going to betray the Messiah. And he pretends to be concerned about the poor. And remember, we read this in the previous program in the context of social justice and wanting to take away from this one to give to the poor, etc., so that everybody can be on the same level playing field. Messiah would say, the poor you're always going to have with you. And what does that mean? It means the poor you're always going to have with you. There's always going to be poor people. There are always going to be people who have less than others, and you cannot legislate that away. It just is. So then, Judas here feigns a genuine concern for the poor. So if we had just taken this very costly ointment from this woman who owns it, and we could have taken the proceeds and we could have given it to those who have less and who are less fortunate. But that was just a show. He wasn't really concerned about the poor. He just wanted to take from her and line his own pockets. And here's why I find that very interesting. Because the Greek word for city is polis. Polis, metropolis, Indianapolis, Minneapolis, Annapolis, Megalopolis, Decapolis, all these words and names that we've heard, the word polis on the end is the Greek term for city. from that word, we get words like politics, politicians, even police, because those are things that, from the Greek language anyway, are associated with polis or the city. They are things associated with the city. Here's why that it's important and why it's relevant to Judas Iscariot. I want to show you on the screen the Hebrew rendering of what we say Iscariot. You see, Iscariot was not his last name. This was kind of a designation. This was identifying him, distinguishing him from some of the other disciples. And so Iscariot is not his last name. It's a title. And in Hebrew, it would be Iscariot. The Iscariot we have is just transliterated from Iscariot. Now, let me break this down for you with the first word, and that one is the word Ish. Ish is the Hebrew word for man. So again, we're looking at Iscariot or Iscariot, and the first word is Ish or man. Now, let's look at the next word, Kariot. This is the plural form of the word for city. In other words, Kariot means cities. So what we learn here is that Judas Iscariot or Judas Iscariot is a man of the cities. And why do I find that important? Because he's the one that betrayed Messiah. He's the one who pretended to want to help the poor, but really was only interested in furthering his own interests and his own agendas. And in Greek, the word for city, polis, renders things like politics and politicians. And I know that I'm probably going to offend somebody by saying this. It's not going to be on purpose. But who are the people today who are wanting to take, through legislation and other means, take things from others with the idea that they say they're going to give it to those who are less fortunate so that we may attain social justice? Who's doing that? And they're telling us what we want to hear, and especially if you happen to be those who are less fortunate. Am I saying that we shouldn't help people? Not saying that at all. We should, but we should do it because that's what's in our heart to do. But what I'm trying to get across to us here is that in the beginning, in the time of Cain and the time of Nimrod, there were these rebels who were establishing these cities, and they were trying to draw people to these cities, and they were trying to get them to build these cities with the idea, at least what was presented to them, oh, let's come build us a city. Let's make brick. Let's come together. Let's all be one. But you see, Cain had an agenda. And that was, if you think of a murderer and a fugitive who needs to hide out, the best place is in a city. Because when there's mixing and there's mingling and there's all these people coming together, you can more readily conceal who and what you are. You can blend in with the environment and you can hide yourself from someone, or you can attempt to anyway. You can make that claim anyway. And so Nimrod kind of picks up here. He tells people what they want to hear. He tries to gather people to come and let's build this city. He's a man of the city and he is a rebel too. And now there are those today, men of the cities, the polis, who I believe are working in the same way as Cain, as Nimrod, as others, telling people what they want to hear, to get them to come together, supposedly for this very good agenda. But in reality, there's something they're not telling everybody. There's a hidden agenda. And why are they doing this? And why are they being allowed to do this? Well, it goes back to something we spoke of several weeks ago. And it has to do with the prophecy in Jeremiah chapter 16, where God says, when it's time to restore all things and gather all my people together, I'm going to send fishers to fish for them. I'm going to send fishers of men, if I can put it that way. And they're going to carry the gospel, and they're going to carry the good news, and they're going to carry my word. But if my people will not respond to the fishers, then I must send the hunters. I must send those who set traps, who set snares, who lure people into their little snare. And they'll make it sound good, and they'll make it sound appealing, and they will appeal to those emotions and those that way of thinking that, oh, I'm going to do something good. But before you realize what's happened, the trap closes. And I believe that's exactly what's going on in the world today. Not just in America, but throughout the world. But I want to leave you with this one last thought today before we pick it up again next week. And that is, Cain had said, I shall be hidden from your face. I believe implying, I'm going to hide from you. And that's why I built a city. But you can't hide from God. In fact, in Jeremiah 16, he said, you shall not be hidden from my face. Your iniquities will not be hidden from me. And so, in part, perhaps God set that mark on Cain because Cain said, I shall be hidden from your face. He didn't want anybody to kill Cain. True. But maybe it's like this. X marks the spot. Now you know what to look for in the beginning so that you can better understand what's happening in the end. Until next week, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BuildCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BuildCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.